Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Have you seen that mukbang stuff?
Mukbang?
Mukbang. So I think it's Korean.
Uh-huh.
Classic YouTube phenomenon that's come out of nowhere. Basically, people eat on camera.
Oh, yes, I have seen this.
It was supposed to be just this like interesting voyeuristic thing, and people like pay so much money to these YouTubers who are like just sitting and eating a load of spaghetti.
We live in the worst timeline.
I think it is actually the darkest timeline.
It's just like, it's so bad that these things have. I mean, and like bad is the wrong word because I don't want to like, you know, everyone's individual and people.
We ain't gonna yuck no one's yums.
Exactly, but like, man, it's weird.
Yes.
Like collectively, all at once, yeah. It's all very weird.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we won't be starting a mukbang podcast.
Yet.
Sorry. For yeah, yet. We'll wait until, I was going to say the money dries up, but
yeah, this is our primary careers.
It really, really is.
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with monologues and Mountain Dew.
Yes.
Is that your classy laugh?
Yes. Oh, wait, I've just realized I've made a big blunder.
You really have, because now we can't talk about what we're drinking today because you've already stolen every joke we could possibly make.
You always go first, so good luck.
Today, I'm drinking a, what does he call it? A pansy serum.
Wow.
Isn't that what, I think that's what he calls it in the show, in A Midsummer Nightmare with Zombies.
Yes, it is. It is. Well done.
You're welcome. Bravo. You're welcome, America. Bravo.
I'm drinking this drink. This is a true story. I mean, it's not actually true. I'm not drinking it right now, but I have drunk.
Uh-huh.
Drunk. It was... a lovely can of like apple flavored soft drink, with Bulbasaur on it, the Pokemon, and it was from Japan.
Oh, that's good. That's wonderful. Apple flavored,
that, right? Apple, yeah. Bulbasaur is apple.
I just never would have thought of Bulbasaur as being apple flavored.
No, maybe like because what were the other ones? So you had Pikachu was there, and it was like a sort of a mango.
Okay.
But one of them was really obscure. Was it Squirtle? I think it might have been Squirtle, but it was nothing to do with like liquid or water. It was something like lychee. I think it was lychee.
Huh. Weird.
Lychee. Sorry.
Yeah, there you go. That's the right way.
But, lychee.
You know, I didn't know if it was a. Is that a Scottishism?
Lychee. No, I'm just pronouncing it the way it should be. We're not getting into this yet. Lychee.
Not after last time.
No, the last lychee incident.
Why? Why the Mountain Dew, the pansy serum, and soft drink from Japan, Jimmy?
From Japan. Well, that would be telling. So instead, I'm going to give you a quiz question.
I'm excited.
Well, another quiz statement. We seem to be doing quite a lot of quiz statements recently.
We have got, really, if anything, we have the structure of this podcast down pat. And
we're stunning. Okay, so, well, sadly, in fact, very sadly.
It is. It's really a travesty.
Devastatingly. The musical adaptation of this young adult novel does not star Mr. Keanu Reeves as the antagonist. Ugh.
Wouldn't that be the day?
It will. Maybe it will be.
Maybe it will. Now that it's going off Broadway. What show is it, Jimmy?
We are talking about Be More Chill.
All your nerdiness is ugly.
Nerd? I thought I was more of a geek.
All your stammering's a chore.
What?
Your tics and fidgets are persistent, and your charm is non-existent. We'll fix your vibe, then fix some more.
Wait, stop.
Oh, everything about you is so terrible. Oh, everything about you makes me wanna die.
Jesus Christ.
So don't freak out, and don't resist, and have no doubt, if I assist, you will be more chill. First things first, go buy a new shirt.
What's wrong with my shirt?
So what I like to do now, right, uh-huh. See every time I'm editing, uh-huh. Is when you start to sing a jingle, I'm like, well, I won't be using that song. So that's been a fun adventure. So just to let you know that's what happened.
I'm excited for like the super future cut of me poorly singing instrumental beginnings of...
I think it will be like, we'll eventually be able to, you know, create a whole underscoring of a musical.
Just me going like, da, 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 da.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be beautiful. It'll be really beautiful.
Be more chill.
Be more chill. We all should. We have music and lyrics by Mr. Joe Iconis.
We do, and book by Joe Trace. It's the two Joes working on this show together.
I see what you did there.
There you go.
You looked it up, didn't you?
I did look it up.
That's preparation. Do you want to do the next one?
Sure. And it's this musical, Be More Chill, is based on a young adult novel by Ned Vizzini.
It is. Vizzini?
I think it's Vizzini.
Okay. I guess it depends where you're from.
Man, it's so hard. As a former YouTuber / YouTuber in hibernation, it is so difficult to accurately and correctly track down someone's correct name pronunciation.
Oh my gosh.
Like, let's not even talk about Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Is it?
Right? I don't know.
I just feel like nobody knows.
I feel like I'm wrong every time.
I have watched interviews with his best friend, Stephen Sondheim,
right.
And Stephen Sondheim has said it differently. And I'm like, if we can't trust you, Steve...
Who can we trust?
Who can we trust? So there we go. Anyway.
Be More Chill. Premiered at the Two River Theater in New Jersey in 2015.
Yes, it did. And then we didn't hear from it.
No, for maybe a couple years.
As is normal for a show that happens way out of town and, you know, that's that. And then suddenly, kaboom... Tumblr finds it and it becomes one of the most talked about shows on Tumblr. It was the second most talked about show on Tumblr behind Ham.
Yeah, which is huge. If you ever look at the analytics of like where Hamilton is in any kind of online discourse versus whatever the number two is at that time, it's like orders of magnitude. So to be number two is, it's basically being number one.
Exactly. Absolutely. And if you don't really count Tumblr as a rating for anything, which is, you know, fair. It also, in its 97th week of release, the cast album went into the Billboard's Broadway Top 10 charts.
Yeah, like what a...
97 weeks.
Like what a slow... It was closed. It had been closed for years by the time it hit the Billboards. No, which is so... The growth of the show is crazy, and I'm sure we'll talk about it.
Insane, absolutely insane. And because of that, therefore, producers have been like, well, hey,
yeah,
rubbing the fist together. And we now have an off-Broadway production coming this summer in July with a view. There's already chat about it going onto Broadway
next
season.
And I'm sure it's going to do absolutely wonderfully. I mean, regardless of the current Broadway season, but then also especially because of the current Broadway season.
Exactly.
That's something to be very, very excited about. I'm sure there are plenty of our listeners out there who are very, very excited about this. I know I am.
Yeah, I think so. I'm excited to see where it goes. And we'll probably talk about that.
Yeah.
As usual, get it on the t-shirt. So, Be More Chill, what is it?
Be More Chill is a pretty much a generic high school story. with a severe sci-fi undertone. I think it's one of the mini documentaries about the cast recording where one of the cast members describes it as Heather's in the world of Mean Girls meets Little Shop of Horrors, which I think is 100% accurate.
Absolutely, absolutely. And because it is, it's harking back to that classic Faustian tale, you know, with your, the devil comes up and says, hey, look at this, I can make you better. And you're like, oh, that sounds good. And then everything starts to go to shit as you get your heart's desire. And then you realize, hey, maybe I had it all along.
Yep.
You know?
So our main character, Jeremy Heer, who Joe Iconis describes as so beyond normal, he is the most uninteresting person in the world. He's not, he's even so boring that he can't even be called a loser. And Jeremy Heer is, you know, trying to struggle through high school when through a series of events ends up in the back of a woman's footlocker, where he purchases a brand new piece of super quantum nanotechnology called a squip. It's a pill you eat and it implants in your brain and then it tells you what to do.
Exactly.
And sci-fi complications ensue.
They absolutely do. But kind of amidst all that, it is your classic high school story of struggling teen coping with emotion in all shapes and sizes. Has a lot of heart to it.
Yes, very much a lot of heart. And like, we were talking about this maybe before we hit record, but like crazy catchy music.
Yes. Like ridiculously so.
So wonderfully written. It's very funny, hyper contemporary. You know, a wonderful encapsulation, I think, of, this is going to make me sound like an old fart, but the contemporary high schooler.
You see them every day.
Hashtag we'll talk about it, but the way high school and high schoolers are represented in this rings truer to me than any other contemporary representation of youth. In a hugely like real and non-demeaning way.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about that actually, because I think that is particularly the non-demeaning thing is the little kicker.
Yeah.
Pew there.
Yeah.
So
shall we?
Are you sitting comfortably?
I am. Are you?
Yes. Then I'll begin. That's a callback to old British television. There you go. We had a show called Watch with Mother.
Oh, that sounds like the title of an Arrested Development episode.
Yeah. Mother boy. So I've been rewatching it.
Find the bad guy, push him aside, then move on forward with your friend at your side. It's a two-player game, so when they make an attack, you know you got a brother gonna have your back. Then you stay on track, and I remain on course, and if they give you a smack, you gotta use your force. And if you leave your brother behind, it's lame, because it's an F-top world, but it's a two-player game. Hey!
So, I think, for this one, let's start with content. We always kind of leave content to the end. Let's start with content and then we can see what that content did. So obviously Joe Iconis, we don't see him in the Broadway sphere.
No, but definitely in the like New York musical theater sphere.
Yes, and on the televisual.
Oh yes.
Sphere, of
TV
course.
TV Smash, because... hashtag season 3 soon. I'm contractually obligated to say that. It's not going to happen. But if we say it happens enough, then it will happen. That's how these things happen. I'm sorry. I saw the color drained from your face. That was amazing. I'm sorry.
I got tingles in my fingers there.
I didn't mean to tease
you
like that.
That's really cruel. But Bombshell, still on the horizon.
It's true. So Joe Iconis, one of the staff writers, I don't know, wrote a couple songs for Smash.
Yeah. Yeah, he was there for he did a fair few, a lot of the good Broadway Here I Come, for example.
Yes,
you can't get there.
Also, huge on the cabaret circuit in New York, 54 yes. Below, Joe's Pub, always doing, you know, Joe Iconis and friends singing inappropriate musical theater songs that aren't really from a particular show yet, definitely has made a name for himself in that kind of sphere.
Yeah, and I think as well he. I don't think you can deny that he has a sound.
Yes. I think his sound is contemporary musical theater done right. Like the contemporary musical theater we joke about in contemporary musical theater song is the Joe Icona sound. Like that's, I think, what it's parodying.
Yeah, but and it's good. Yeah, and it's good form.
Yeah.
Because I would put him up there as someone that I really enjoy his music, like someone like Ryan Scott Oliver.
Yeah.
Obviously, like with 35mm. I just think he does different things. He's not sitting down at his piano and turning out a song that was written 4 years ago by Kerrigan and Loudermilk.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
It's not always just a rock pop sound with in the middle of it all.
Yeah. And I like to think as well, I think he kind of uses the sounds appropriately. Does
yeah
that make sense?
I mean, what that absolutely, I think, like, I've listened to Be More Chill a whole bunch now, and a lot of the songs have the generic contemporary musical theater song spiel to them, but plenty of, like, you know, then all of a sudden we'll swing into a tango or a real reggae kind of feel, or like, you know, the finale has this kind of like driving country bumpkin feel to it all. And so he breaks out of the form or the stereotype a bunch.
He definitely does. And he does something that I have always been surprised has never happened more. And that he kind of writes like emo music.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
I'm talking like light emo. Like you're talking your Fall Out Boys, your Panic at the Disco's, your Green Days.
Yeah.
Right? Because even, it's weird, even American Idiot doesn't sound as emo as Joe Icona's stuff. Now, I was one of, I'm talking about my brothers and sisters here. I'm not doing this in a disparaging way.
Right, no.
Like,
yes,
no
Jimmy.
One can deny that Fall Out Boy and Panic at the Disco are very good.
Right, exactly.
I think a lot of people
no one can deny
that.
Jimmy's secret past as a former emo theater kid.
The pics are out there.
It's true,
just
they are.
Just saying. but the first time I listened to this, I was totally struck by the fact that I was like, oh my God, this is, you know, I mean, this is going back to like, you know, Sugar We're Going Down, Swing It. Like,
right.
It was just like, oh, I totally had that nostalgic flashback.
Yeah.
I was so impressed. And then I was kind of taken being like, wait, no one's done this yet. Why?
Exactly. Yeah, it is interesting because we certainly have had the rap and hip hop influx from Lin-Manuel Miranda into the musical theater sphere.
Yeah.
But we don't have this kind of, as you've said, Fall Out Boy, Panic at the Disco kind of feel until really Joe Iconis.
I would say so. Like, I genuinely, like I say, even American Idiot, obviously those songs are written by Green Day and that, but the way they've been adapted, sometimes they take that away.
Yeah, they get like musical theaterized.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I feel like this has gone in the other way.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's just, you know, it was attractive to us at the time. I mean, I'm speaking on behalf of you here.
Right.
But like, it was attractive to me at the time because I was a teenager having all of these hormones and the music was deeply hormonal. I don't know what it is about it, but it's just the way it was.
Yeah, well, he writes good music. He happens to write musical theater, but the music he writes is, you know, not pop in genre, but pop in ideal. It is appealing. It is hummable. It is singable while not being dumb, while not being simplistic. You know, it is, I would say, complex in ways that, like, Sondheim is complex, but without some of the, like, intellectualism that certainly, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way, but some of the like intellectualism that feels like a gatekeeper towards Sondheim or maybe even like Rodgers and Hammerstein,
like Adam
Gittell.
So it's interesting you say that about the intellectualism, because I actually do think this is a very, or it has lots of simple elements to the point it makes it extremely accessible.
Yes, accessible was the word that was swirling in my brain too.
Right. And I think you could weigh up whether that's a good thing, whether that's a bad thing. I think it's a perfectly acceptable thing.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, you know what I mean? There are musicals out there that you'll listen to about 40 or 50 times and you still won't really get it, but you'll know, I like it. Whereas I think you just listen to this once through and you're like, oh, that was bloody great.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It just has that nice, easy.
And it sits in a great part where it is not the you know, coming off of something like Forum or The Producers, it is not so simplistic that you're like, oh, right, it's the surface. All I need to see is the surface. I don't need to think. I don't need to analyze. I don't need to dive in. Like, Joe Iconis' work is not that. There is metaphor. There is symbolism. There is repeated imagery. There are themes that come back that mean things.
Yeah.
But it is not, you know, clutching to a copy of Life just to keep in touch. Like, it's not so seeped in poetry that, like, it. I think that turns some audiences off, because musical theater and even just theater itself can feel like a walled garden where,
yes,
if you don't know the secret password to get in, well, I'll never understand it. And
yeah, absolutely.
Joe Iconis' work is inviting. It says, you will be able to understand me.
Exactly. And I think, I'm sure at the end of this podcast, we'll weigh up how did it happen.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the big, big reasons why it is as popular as it is, because it has attracted so many new musical theater fans.
Yeah. You know? 100%.
In the same way some of its other contemporary shows, which we'll talk about, did as well.
Yeah.
It is a very welcoming show. And it's not even down, I wouldn't say just down to like the real hashtag relatable content.
Right.
It is actually just down to the musical content.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, I think what makes it so appealing for me is it still, Joe doesn't sacrifice the musical integrity for that relatability. Like, you listen to the orchestration for the show and it's filled with like theremins and like whatever the like, you know, glass, water, harp things that like make super horror movie style noises. Like, the instrumentation for the show is tailor made for the content in that way that I want musical theater to be, but not so much so that you're like, well, I don't understand what I'm supposed to be feeling right now.
Yeah, exactly. But what I will say, and I'll put this out to you, discussion point, if you will. Well, I would say the music, I'm 100% with you, top notch. The lyrics.
Yeah.
There are some moments, Thomas,
A-.
where I would say, yes, yeah, maybe a B plus, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to hit you with some examples, and I would like you to tell me, do you think this is necessary, or do you think we could have spent another 20 minutes and maybe come up with something else?
Yeah.
The first one being, then.
Well, I know you've also listed here, na 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 na
na na na.
And yes. I've put in my biggest pet peeve from Pitiful Children, where
beep.
But I think,
but what I will say to you about beep, catchy as hell.
Yeah. Well, and I think also, while we call these out mostly out of comedy, I think these aren't the best examples of my least favorite lyrics.
Yes, I would also agree.
I like, in, let's say, even Pitiful Children, like, what is it? Turn that knob and switch that gear, which is like a throwaway filler line in Pitiful Children, but it's not right, because there's a lot of like physical mechanical imagery that happens in Pitiful Children, and that's not the kind of technology we're talking about. It is not the correct imagery. The other one that bothers me, I was talking with my boyfriend about this because we're big Nintendo fans, but in two-player game, these are the things that I thought was going to bother me when I went to see Ready Player One, which I actually kind of enjoyed. But like, video games done wrong. And it's a plot point in this that they're good at video games and that they're good at like zombie fighting video games.
Yeah.
But Michael has a lyric about fighting Nintendo zombies, and the lyric was picked because Nintendo has the right number of syllables for that phrase, for sure. But there's no such thing as a Nintendo zombie. Right? Like, there's, and like,
we don't do that in our
I know that as a video game nerd, that like zombies,
I know what they mean.
Right?
I know what they mean. They mean Redeads in The Legends of Zelda.
Right. Like,
that's what they mean.
But there is no quote unquote Nintendo game that is the like Apocalypse of the Damned, the cafetorium zombie killer game that they're talking about. Not in the way that, like, we should understand the reference. And so, like, those sorts of things, and I'm glad they're few and far between, but those are the sorts of things that would kill a, like, young audience appeal piece like this. You know,
yeah.
It's the...
Because it's that kind of like grandpa being, oh, playing where your Nintendos are, right.
Yeah, exactly. The Animaniacs does a bit about this where it's like the nerd at the computer and he's like, in episode number 65, you've noticed that like, really there's never been this sort of thing where they have three fingers, but the nerds are going to call this sort of stuff out, and Animaniacs lampshades it and parodies it. But it's true. The nerds are going to notice these things, and the kids are going to notice these things. And if it's not 100% accurate, you've killed your credibility immediately.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those sorts of things we get close to in some of the, like, carelessness is the wrong word, but lack of attention in some of the lyrics.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I just feel like, I don't know, I think there are just a few moments where it's like, just spend, like, I feel like for then, like, don't repeat a word that doesn't mean anything.
Right. And, like, maybe you're doing something super interesting with your staging in that particular moment.
They're not. I've seen that.
Right. So, like, then, you know, justify it that way. Exactly. Like...
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly.
I especially feel that about na-na-na-na-na-na-na, because it comes back a whole bunch and is in the finale.
Uh-huh. But, so, right, I think I put na-na-na-na-na-na-na there as a, like, discussion point because... if we think about something like Spring Awakening, right? We have blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But here's the ticker, right? Blah, 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 blah means something.
Right. It has a purpose in the story, whereas na, 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 na is filler to get the chorus in.
Yeah.
And like...
But then...
And like the thing... This is where I'm torn because... Iconis does this in other songs. Where...
Well, if you think the one I think about always is because I think they're actually quite similar is the goodbye song in Smash.
Okay. I've never watched Smash. Have I told you this?
Wait. What?
That's all right. We'll
I'm through with this podcast.
Jimmy has put his headphones down. He has walked away.
Wait, can we do another podcast
on Smash? Where I watch Smash and then we talk about it.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear what you think about Smash. I can't believe you never watched Smash.
Maybe we'll do a summer special or something. But Joe Iconis does this thing where he has the chorus sing like backup, offstage or otherwise. And so na 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 is born out of that desire. But in the other places it is musically relevant, whereas when na 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 happens, you could like just cut to the next lyric and no one would be any of the wiser.
Yeah. So it's not a lyric.
Yeah.
It's just like extra, extra. I don't know. Like, and that's kind of fine. And pulling teeth here, totes my goats. I do just think there are moments where it's like, this could be, the thing is, it's like, it's like you say, musically, it's stellar.
Yeah.
I just think there are things that could push it to that kind of nth level that, you know, you're not gonna lose your audience,
right?
But for us, our little, you know, intellectual folks who love a bit of trickery, who love a little bit of wordplay every now and then,
you use that moment, you have that moment, don't waste it, you know.
Yeah.
Or cut, you know, that moment.
That's it. Yeah, just say like then and riff or something. I don't know, something like, you don't need to say it 12 times.
Yeah,
like, it's, I don't know. I mostly wanted to make this up because of then. I just think it's mildly inexcusable.
Yeah.
But you know, that's fine.
It is fine because it's a great show. It really is.
I think that's probably going to be one of the only negative things. Well, no, that's not true. I've got something else in my tank.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm actually quite intrigued to see what you think about this because.
Yeah, I think.
Curveballs.
I mean, I would, if we're talking broad strokes on the terms of positive and negative things, I think Be More Chill is, from a certain lens, the best musical to happen in the 2010s.
Wow.
Yeah. Is that big statements?
I mean, yeah, I fully disagree with that one.
Right,
but
okay.
That's not for this podcast. Wait, really?
From a certain lens. If we're talking,
what lens is that?
If we're talking about musical theater as viability and commerciality and popularity from a artistically grounded standpoint, I think Be More Chill has it. Over something, so like, what's yours? Great Comet?
No, Hamilton.
Okay, yeah.
Like, just in terms of the categories that you put, like, because I know Great Comet isn't accessible.
Right, yeah. I think
I'm down with that.
I think Be More Chill. I think Be More Chill is more accessible than Hamilton.
I mean, I guess, but the stats haven't proven
that. And it's catchier than Hamilton.
I would give you that, but I would say,
and it's more relatable than Hamilton.
So here's this.
Yeah.
What Hamilton does is it gives you, here's your lovely relatable content that does exist, yeah, right? But it's also like, here's your time to really delve in and learn something and kind of have that, like I just said before, about having that little
right
intellectual itch there,
yeah,
that allows people, because that was one of the things that was very new with Hamilton, is people were like pouring over it as
right
if it was,
it's like, here's
a discovered
and
text.
I think
you can't do that with Be More Chill.
Well, but I think that's my controversial opinion about musical theater that is maybe a big antithesis to my whole life, or my discussion of musical theater and my, you know, super hyper vigilance about it as online commentary. But I do think the best musical theater is not overtly intellectual.
Uh-huh.
And I think Hamilton is overtly intellectual.
Uh-huh.
You can't go to Hamilton and not be challenged to think, right?
Yep.
And I think that's wonderful. Like, clearly Hamilton has the success, right? And clearly he's doing wonderful, and I agree with all these things. But I want musical theater that on its surface can be relatively non-challenging, but then with analysis can become challenging, and with very little analysis, because that's the trick of theater. We talked about this with Fun Home, maybe? Did we talk about Fun Home?
We have talked about Fun Home.
About, like, tricking your audience into a controversial subject.
Yes. We also talked about it in Scottsboro Boys.
Yes. And like, you know, reeling them in with that allure of like fun night at the theater. But then like, haha, we got you and we made you think for a little bit. Whereas like Hamilton from the beginning is like, boom, you know, we have a bunch of controversial bones to pick about all these sorts of things. And I think the most successful art is subversive in a way that Be More Chill is, in a way that Hamilton isn't. I don't think Hamilton is subversive in that particular flavor.
Agree to disagree.
All right.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's because we're about to talk about the themes.
Yeah.
So we can discuss that more there. Shall we do that?
Let's do that.
Let's do that.
Michael in the bathroom at a party. As I choke back the tears, I'll wait as long as I need till my face is dry, or I'll just blame it on weed or something in my eye. I'm just Michael, who you don't know. Michael flying solo. Michael in the bathroom by himself. Start to shout soon. Knock, 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 knock. Oh, hell yeah, I'll be out soon. Knock, 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 knock. It sucks he left me here alone. Knock, 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 knock. Here in this teenage battle zone. Clang, 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 clang. I feel the pressure blowing up. Bang, 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 bang. My big mistake was showing up. Splash, 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 splash. I throw some water in my face, and I am in a better place. I go to open up the door, but I can't hear knocking anymore.
Okay, we're doing that. So, yeah. So, well, let's just jump straight on that. I don't know. I think Hamilton has... I don't want this to become a Hamilton podcast, because we've definitely talked about that one enough. But I don't know. I think Hamilton has that layer of, this is an interesting story about someone's life. It's kind of gossipy.
Yeah.
You know, there's moments of... there's a love story. oh, there's tragedy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the end. So I think it has a surface, and then you get into it, and then it's like, oh, this is a story about immigration. Oh, this is a story about infidelity. This is a story about relationships.
I think, and what puts the break in it for Hamilton for me is Hamilton still remains Brechtian, right? It is still observational. And certainly you sympathize and empathize with the characters, but I think less so than something like Be More Chill.
I would say the characters in Be More Chill 20,000 times more relatable.
Right. But that's the subversion for me.
But what I would say with that is, I think what Be More Chill gives you is one note. I think Be More Chill gives you, we all go through anxiety. The best way to get through it is to just start believing in yourself and you work through it. I think that's what it's got. I don't actually think it's got layers in that respect.
I would say there's a layer about technology and the future and our reliance on technology. I would say there's a layer about the, and maybe this is my own perspectives becoming bigger in my mind than they are for the real world, but like the way it portrays high schoolers and contemporary high school challenges read very real to me in a way that isn't discussed in a lot of other media as accurately, I think. And I think talking about a show about like overcoming anxiety, it is such a particular flavor of that is so hyper-contemporary, difficult to talk about, but something that I feel is a huge commonality among adolescents today. Yeah. Like, that it speaks to its gigantic appeal.
Exactly.
And, like, doesn't conclude it in a great sort of way. Like, that makes it more powerful to me than a 2.5-hour long metaphor about our founding fathers and how it applies to America today. Not that that isn't also
okay,
but
I do see what you mean, and I can see definitely for teens that is a big reason why, it's because it is that thing. It's like, oh my god, you're speaking, you know, you're thinking exactly what I'm thinking, and that is great for teens.
Yeah, maybe,
but
maybe the way to qualify it for me is like, take the audience members who go see something like Be More Chill and the audience members who go see Hamilton on aggregate, right? And stereotype or classify the changes in thought they might make in their life based upon seeing that piece.
Yeah.
I think more people will leave Be More Chill changed than people will leave Hamilton changed.
Interesting.
And that to me is powerful and important, and like part of why I do theater and art and why I think I gravitate towards this.
Let me muse on that for a second. I think, yes, would agree, but again, the change would be surface level. Real talk, you know, heck, we live in the 21st century, we've all got anxiety issues.
Yeah.
As someone who has been deeply affected by that around this time, and I mean high school time.
Yeah.
You know, I could be one of these school kids.
Yeah.
I found ways to cope, found ways to get through it. This musical doesn't give me anything new.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it just tells me something I already know.
Yeah. Interesting. And I do see so that.
What I think we're developing here, I think what we're kind of coming to is the fact that there is a huge demographic of people who this will speak to their soul.
Right.
And there are a huge demographic of people who can recognize that, but they've gone through the change.
Right. And they're like, they've seen, yes, I remember. It becomes a nostalgia piece almost.
Almost, exactly.
How awkward was high school?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's that like, that show was lovely compared to that show changed my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I do see that. And right? I do think, you know, I think the discussion is like, is Be More Chill more revolutionary than every other stereotypical John Hughes style discussion of adolescence that has ever existed and come before it? From
John Hughes.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off, 16 Candles.
Cool, thank you. Yes.
You know,
Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club.
Yeah, cool.
You know, but then Mean Girls, which is decidedly imitating John Hughes' films, Glee.
Yep.
Like, this is a trope. This is a huge trope.
This is a big old trope.
That continues to exist. And if I'm wagering, if I'm putting all my cards down, I think Be More Chill, both the novel and then the musical, put a unique and interesting spin, regardless of the sci-fi tropes that kind of seep through it, on that high school story that I haven't that I haven't seen before, that I haven't tasted before, that encapsulates the like mid-2000s to 2018 kind of, you know, post-millennial teenager.
So I think one of the things that makes Be More Chill good in that respect is because it has this sci-fi element.
Right.
What that does is it does kind of take you out of it.
Right.
So I'm going to pull up Dear Evan Hansen here and dangle it beside. And I know you've got something in your tongue and we will talk about it in a sec. And I'm going to dangle it beside. So obviously, you know, the two of them are talking about very, very similar things there.
Oh, yes. Talk about the dangers of parallel creation.
Yeah. So what I would say that Be More Chill does that I don't think Dear Evan Hansen does as successfully is it doesn't romanticize the anxiety. It doesn't romanticize these deep, dark feelings to a point where it's like they seem glorious, they seem unreachable.
Yes.
What Be More Chill does is it makes them, it normalizes them.
Yes. This is a thing I said to my boyfriend yesterday, and he said, you can't say that on the podcast. People will hate you.
Right.
So I'm going to say it right now. I think Be More Chill is the musical that Dear Evan Hansen wants to be.
I genuinely agree. Yeah. And I to be honest, though, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it will take long before other people start thinking that, too.
Yeah. And I think it is partially to do with the sci-fi element because it's like it's a misdirection. It's like, look over here, oh, robots, ooh, computers, you know? But like the core of discussion of teenagers in this is so real, which I know that always makes me sound like a hashtag adult when I start talking about
these
things.
I know.
And I have these discussions with the kids that I'm responsible for, and I see their faces glaze over, and I don't know a way to articulate, like, but I do understand.
I know.
And, like,
I
actually do, not in the way that adults think they do. Then also that I realize that that may just be I don't understand.
Exactly. And, that's probably it. But, exactly. You know, we'll see it anyway.
Right. But, like, and I know a lot of the depictions of high school in this are glorified or romanticized in the same way they are in High School Musical. In High School John Hughes style movies, these sorts of things. Like, there aren't...
And in High School Musical, by the way.
Right. But, like, there aren't, you know, wicked raging benders every weekend in high school. But they happen, you know.
Yeah. And they happen on Halloween.
Yeah.
It's not just, oh, it's Saturday night, guys.
And kids are met with these terribly awkward, impossible to deal with social situations that they are so poorly equipped to deal with, not because of any fault of their own, but just because of where they are in life and what they've experienced, and because of how difficult they are, because of how actually difficult they are, which is a thing that Be More Chill understands and depicts, and as you said, doesn't, you know, terribly glorify or romanticize. Exactly. You know, like, my big problem with Dear Evan Hansen is making Evan Hansen the hero. Like,
exactly.
He's a shithead. He's such a
tool.
Dick in a way that I don't think humans would be as fully and completely in real life.
No.
Where Dear Evan,
no, not at all.
Where Be More Chill gets closer, and because it gets to hide under some of the satire of like the smartphone hour and the sci-fi-ness of it all, and some
but
of these
I would
jokes.
Say, I would even just keep like nailing this point and say Michael in the Bathroom. Like, Michael in the Bathroom, the first time I listened to it without really listening to it, I thought, oh, cool, comedy staple.
Right.
You know what I mean? New tenor comedy staple, fab. Yeah. And then you listen to it, you're like, oh, actually, oh, it's actually talking about something.
Yeah.
but it's not being like, I am really struggling here.
Yeah.
You know, the dark thoughts that are in my head. All, you know what I mean? It's not Laban Point. It's just saying, I'm having a shit time.
Yeah. And it has no conclusion. It's not yeah. even that it doesn't have a positive conclusion. It doesn't yeah. have a conclusion. It's just there. This is a stolen comment from one of the documentaries about the cast album. But one of the cast members says, Joey Conis writes songs about moments that you think would never deserve a song.
Yeah.
And that's Michael in the bathroom.
Absolutely. It's... Absolutely. And it's, I think that it's those little things that really, that make it a very a strong piece.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I kind of get, the first time I listened to Dear Evan Hansen, obviously it'd been hyped to hell.
Yeah.
But I kind of went into it and I was like, it just makes me feel a bit nauseous more than anything else, you know, because it's really talking about these big things. We talked about it, was it in Heathers, I guess?
Yeah.
We talked about 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Another extremely problematic
right.
television show that I still don't yeah. think should be on the air.
There is this flavor of teenager that exists right now that adults are really, really struggling to deal with, adults who deal with teenagers, that is this like hyper anxiety, socially connected
introvert.
Yeah, introvert, but still, you know, has more social connections than any 14-year-old has any good reason to have.
Exactly.
You know, is so stressed about a bazillion social contracts they have that are constantly morphing and changing.
That we all know on the outside,
right?
Don't mean diddly squat, but they'll never see that.
Yeah. Well, one of our school counselors has said on multiple times, like, about teenagers, puppy love is still true love to a puppy.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that
Get
great?
That on a crochet pillow.
Oh,
right this second.
It's such a wonderful sentiment that, like,
yep.
When you're in high school, that's all you know.
Exactly.
Not to minimize it, but to expand upon it. Like,
yeah.
This is your whole world, and so it's important, and it's all you have. And so
Absolutely.
These intersocial relationships. And the thing that, this is, I think, where the sci-fi-ness of Be More Chill expands it into people who aren't quite in the circle anymore, is Be More Chill makes these teenage social contracts as real and important and gigantic to the rest of the world. Like, you know, I know I endangered the entire school and probably half of humanity by what I was doing. And like, even if you're not in high school anymore, suddenly Jeremy's actions and how the Squip is influencing him start to have these real world effects in a way that they feel like they should for Joe Average high schooler.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's it. I think that is where the kind of, you know, the adults watching this show, would get the inkling because, I mean, I don't know what it was like to go to parties in the 80s or the 70s. Like, maybe adults were, you know, adults now then when they were young, were locking themselves in the bathroom feeling really, really anxious.
Yeah.
I just feel like I understand anxiety's always been there, but I feel like it's because it's a hot topic and it's somehow kind of worked its way, you know, like the Squip, weirdly enough, into the minds of all of these children.
Yeah.
That it has become its own thing. And I think songs like Michael in the Bathroom just really help show that, look, it's, you know, they're not trying to say the world is ending. They're just trying to say, I'm having a really tough time.
My world is ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just...
There's a hyper youthful voice to it. The one...
Yeah.
The lines that stick out to me, and they happen in a couple different songs, but there's a surprising amount of depression and contemplation of suicide in this show, not in a deep, like, worrisome way, right?
Yeah, you exactly. Know?
Christine jokes about it in play rehearsal, like, I'm depressed, not like, kill yourself depressed. No, I'm not until self-harm. Here, see, check my arm. Michael jokes about it in Michael in the Bathroom, like something, something, or just off myself instead. And that's the way I hear teenagers talk. And as an adult who's responsible for their well-being, it's very off-putting because
Absolutely.
I'm like, you're not just going to go home and kill yourself, are you? And They're not, and they don't, but I'm worried about it, but it's just their vernacular because of how important these things are to them.
Mm-hmm. Now, this has just popped into my head.
Yeah.
What do you think about things like 13 Reasons Why, Dear Evan Hansen, popping these things into their heads?
Yeah, I think because it's a huge mixed bag. I was between schools at the time, but I have a bunch of teacher friends who were teaching when 13 Reasons was coming out, super popular and premiering. And there were schools across America that had like full-fledged suicide watch assemblies because of how popular those things were.
Yeah.
You know, I think Dear Evan Hansen puts a different kind of spin on it. And there is there are all sorts of school action plans and procedures put in place about things like adolescent suicide because they can be self-propagating. And so you have to be, as a responsible adult, super delicate how you approach these things and how you talk about these things. And so then to see media, you know, there's two perspectives, either going into it with reckless abandon or talking about it in a serious, forward-thinking, frank kind of way.
Yeah. And
I think Be More Chill finds that balance where it's real, it's, you know, but is still just distant enough that you're not totally threatened by it. That it leaves you with the positive outcomes as opposed to the negative outcomes. But I do, you know, kids, calling them kids seems so demeaning, and I never mean it that way, but there's no good, you know, adolescents, youth, teenagers. Yeah.
Folk younger than
right?
us.
the growing people that I work with every day.
Yeah, beautiful.
Are so ridiculously complex and so much smarter than I'll ever be in their own collective knowledge. And like, they're... A teenager's bullshit detectors are so acute so fully attuned. And so these things that enter their life, like Dear Evan Hansen, like 13 Reasons Why, like Be More Chill, have to be so perfectly tuned to not set off those bullshit detectors, to not totally exit their life. And that, I think, speaks to how real they must feel. Whether they're actually real, whether it's an actual real representation of what teenage life is like, doesn't matter as much because it is their perception of what life is like. And at the end of the day, all that matters is how important this stuff feels to them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, long story short, it's why I do think this is more impactful than Hamilton. I really do. And
I think
more impactful than Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, hands down, give you that. It's interesting. I think the thing I struggle with that question that you're giving me is that to a certain audience, I would completely agree. You know what I mean? To this youthful audience,
yeah,
I do completely agree, which is a big part. But I think I think there are a lot of adults who would be ignorant to it.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of adults who are going to poo-poo it.
Yeah. But I think that's part of that without knowing it, you're arguing my point. Because I think having impact with a youthful audience weighs heavier than having impact with an adult audience.
I totally agree with you. I totally, because, you know, I believe that children are the future.
Right. Whether we like it or not, they're going to grow up. And
they're
going to live longer.
Yeah. To me, their opinion counts more.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess I just took it as a straight question rather than thinking, what do you mean by this? But yeah, I do see your point. I'd like to think on it before making bold statements as such.
What? Why would you do that?
I know. But I do take your point. And I would say for that demographic, I would completely agree.
Yeah.
There's been nothing like it.
I think, you know, in a practical sense, especially with the momentum it's gaining and the upcoming Off-Broadway production.
Yep.
Dear Evan Hansen is going to be a force. Be More Chill is going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely.
In the coming months to years.
Yeah. Segue of the month. Let's talk about that rise to power.
Let's do it.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's from Japan. It's a gray oblong pill. Quantum nanotechnology CPU. The quantum computer in the pill will travel through your blood until it implants in your brain and it tells you what to do.
So, it's like drugs?
It's better than drugs, Jeremy.
It's from Japan!
It's a gray oblong pill. Quantum nanotechnology CPU. The quantum computer in the pill will travel through your blood until it implants in your brain and it tells you what to do. It tells you what to do. It's pre-programmed.
I feel like the Broadway press is just kind of like, what?
Yeah.
Because everyone's just realized that this musical is huge.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, wait, hang on. Wait, be more chill. Yes. And millennials.
There's dozens of internet people who are like, how did you miss this?
Exactly.
How did you not see this coming?
So my question to you, I think we've discovered this around the same time. I remember speaking about it.
Yeah.
And I think it was shortly after the cast recording got released.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely think so. I'm trying to think
like
back.
Like 2016.
Yeah. I made it a show of the week a while back, but it was after I had heard about it for a while.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it definitely entered my lexicon after it had closed.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I heard about it. There's a musical theater radio station in the UK who had Joe Iconis on.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just chatting about it. And I think he was selling it. So I guess that would have been, or maybe he was just selling the cast recording.
Yeah.
But there was a promo element to it. So maybe the cast recording was just coming out.
Right.
And that was the first time I heard it. I was like, oh, that sounds like Fallout Boy. I'm intrigued. And then I listened to it and I was like, oh, wait, this is good. So I feel like, you know, hey, we were there at the start.
Let's give us that. Sure, we can say that without too much like posers.
We are. let's not deny that. But just in the sense that I've been listening to this musical for a long, long time.
Yeah, yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know? Because it does keep coming back.
Yeah, it does. It keeps popping up. It keeps showing up again. You know, it's damn catchy.
It really, really is. And so I'm not here to say, oh, we discovered it. You know, why are you being so slow?
No.
You know, I'm not saying that because everyone has to discover it in time.
But that's the question. Who did, right?
I know.
How did this happen? Yeah.
I never expected it to happen.
Yeah. No.
I didn't. Because it was Heathers. To me, that was Heathers.
Yeah.
Heathers did that and it was like, oh, okay. That's really funny. That's really freaky.
But Heathers has a pop culture following as a movie and
exactly.
like, a way in. But
yep.
Be More Chill, you know, it is not even Ned Vizzini's most popular book.
I don't have a clue who Ned Vizzini is. I don't think he's ever touched over here. And yet,
he's got kind of a funny story. He is a book he wrote that was adapted into a movie. His story is very tragic. He committed suicide
in the
mid-2000s.
Yep.
But so, like, how did this happen? You know, because we're in this world, we watch this world of internet musical theater culture, and this one just kind of like
exactly. It's like you take your eye off Tumblr for 2 seconds,
right?
And then
suddenly
everyone's
there's
making
3,000 animatics.
Like, yeah. Because I feel like that's it. Like when we talked about Heathers, it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah,
it was like I don't know, like half a year ago, something like that. It still wasn't
No.
On the radar.
It had already kind of like outsailed its popularity.
Yeah.
It was like, Be More Chill is going off Broadway and the world is dying about it. Like, is so excited.
The world is blessed. I've never seen the word blessed used more than the YouTube comments of anything to do with Be More Chill.
Yeah. Like, people are really so excited for the ability to see this show performed, you know, regardless of half the original cast and what's-his-face from Dear Evan Hansen. But, like, and especially if this gets a Broadway transfer, I can't think of another show whose amateur theatrical rights were released before possibility of a Broadway transfer was even, like, a twinkle in someone's eye, you know?
Absolutely. Or for a show to enter the Billboard charts before it got, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, never.
Yeah.
Never. Maybe Heather's, I don't know. But never.
Yeah.
Like,
A crazy timeline.
It's absolutely bonkers. And the thing is I don't think we'll be able to find an answer because no one can explain why things go viral.
Right.
You know, sometimes there are aggregates and sometimes there are these.
But I do think that's the thing, is this show went viral.
A show went viral.
In a day and age where, like, that's possible. Where, like, things can do that.
The thing is we can compare it to something like Hamilton. Hamilton also went viral, absolutely. But what Hamilton had was a producing team behind it and Lin-Manuel Miranda behind it and, you know,
and marketing teams and Ham for Ham and a weekly YouTube show and all these things.
A stunning campaign.
Talk show
this
appearances.
Had nothing.
Nothing.
This had literally nothing.
It
appeared.
Yeah. This is, I mean, I find it so heartening. You know, the theme of this year's podcast has been how sad we are about the current Broadway season. This gives me such unending hope for things like this. That something, you know, in the same way that Dear Evan Hansen kind of co-opted, but like a grassroots fan base entirely, you know, with a foundation in pure artistry and relatability that has nothing to do with a marketing team, that has nothing to do with popularity or a franchise that it's related to, but it's just good and people like it. And so it does well.
Exactly. So why do people like it? I guess we've talked about that a little bit already.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that is the most appealing to it and to this, you know, millennial generation. I hate that word, but it doesn't matter.
They're actually, I went to a talk recently. Kids younger than us aren't millennials anymore. The new phrase.
Are they Generation X?
No, Generation X is before us.
Are we Generation X?
We are millennials. Generation
we
X.
We are millennials.
Generation X grew up watching X-Files. That's a good way to qualify it. Does that help?
Wait, am I not Generation X then?
Well, think like adolescence in the 90s. Not like being a young kid in the 90s, but like being a teenager in the 90s. That's Gen X. But the new term they're using for basically kids who have been born since the iPhone existed are iGen, which
I looked this up, and the next one is going to be called like Generation Alpha or something like that.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's too early.
That's
to
what
decide,
the next. But they've already called it. Okay, the next generation.
You are a generationalist. But like the kids I teach are part of iGen now, are not millennials.
Okay, great. So these lovely iGen team, you know, are very aware and very astute about important topics.
Yeah.
And in fact, they talk about it in Be More Chill very, very subtly. It was in I Love Play rehearsal of all the songs. And Christine says, I've got mad gigantic feelings, red and frantic feelings about most everything, like gun control, like spring, you know, and that's fine. But it's that thing, it's like very, very young children are very, very aware of big issues.
Yeah. Well,
an age.
And the commentary that a kid that age might have similarly passionate feelings about gun control and the perennial season of spring.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I think one of the things that obviously makes this very appealing is it comes from an extremely liberal standpoint.
Yeah.
And a very, very, it's a very left-wing show. And that's something actually that the more you delve into it, the more you uncover.
Mm-hmm.
and I want to come at it from an LGBT standpoint,
okay,
right at the start.
Yeah.
Because, so the first time I listened to it, I got pissed off, mm-hmm, because I was like, come on, like, it's 2015, right. Why are there no gays?
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Give me something.
Yeah.
And then I read about it, and it turns out, oh, actually, one of the characters is bisexual.
Right. And comes out over the course of the show.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. And then I start looking into Tumblr, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never seen this much slash fan fiction.
Yeah.
Since,
well, even before the slash fan fiction, can I tell you in More Than Survive, like, this is a struggle for me. I love gay jokes.
Uh-huh.
I really, as a very gay man myself, yeah, I really enjoy a particular brand of joke where, like, you say, like, man, that's so fucking gay. Or, uh-huh, like, in the right context,
yes,
making the perfect joke to say, like, man, you're such a faggot. Which, like, I struggle to say out loud out of context right now, because
absolutely,
I know,
yeah, yeah,
how demeaning those words are. And I, yeah, know the, like, cultural and social history they have. But I think there is something powerful and honestly funny about the particular usage of them. But there's a bazillion caveats attached to it.
Uh-huh.
And the gay jokes that this show makes fall into that category perfectly for me.
Yeah.
About signing up for the play, you know, signing up for being called gay. And then he signs up for the play and is like, gay, ha, I like gay people.
Exactly.
It's so funny.
It's just so silly. It is so silly because, and as well, like, it's a total thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's a total thing. We've gone through that. When we all came out in, yeah, high school, it was very much like, oh my God, I love gays.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's so real.
It's so real. And, like, it does the, it comes a lot out of the book, which was, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about the book later, but the book was literally decades ahead of its time. It came out in 2004.
Right.
Which is crazy for how much technology is in it. They reference, there's a bunch of jokes about remembering phone numbers in it. And once you have a squip, you don't have to remember anyone's phone number anymore.
Wow. Oh,
which, like, that's not, like, we don't have to remember anyone's phone number anyway.
Tell you a single one.
Or, like, yeah, at one point, Jeremy describes the squip as, like, having a PDA inside your brain. Which is really funny.
So funny.
Right? But
because I haven't heard that word in so long.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
But there's also, there's a huge subplot in the book about Jeremy stealing his aunt's Beanie Babies to sell them on eBay to make the, yep, money to buy the squip.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make it into the musical at all. But his dad catches him looking at Beanie Babies on eBay,
right,
like, accidentally. And so then he has to keep up this whole ruse about looking at Beanie Babies on eBay because it's a thing he's interested in.
Right.
But his dad is like, son, are you gay? You could tell us if you were gay, but are you gay? And he's like, I'm not gay, but I keep looking at Beanie Babies on the internet, so I understand why my father might think that.
Yeah.
And, like, I find that so funny, and I understand, yeah, how some people might find that offensive, but I think I don't find it offensive, you know?
No, it's not. It's the lightest of, you know what I mean?
Right.
Humors is great.
Well, and
I've got 12 Beanie Babies sitting in my bedroom right now.
Right? It's
admission.
It's normalizing. It's,
yeah,
you know, we can joke about this the same way we can joke about other things that,
yeah,
you know, are less impactful for our life.
Totally. So, yeah, so further delving into it in the slash fiction and all of that, I was like, okay, let's think about Michael here.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people, you know, the biggest, like, the stans are always, I think they have names, actually. So they're called the boyfriends, because that's what happens.
Because that's what happens to their backpack.
Yep.
That's a good one.
And I can't remember what there's a Michael, I think it's Michael Jake, it might be Michael Rich. One of them is called, like, expensive headphones.
Oh my God.
And I'm sure that's a deep reference. I don't get it. I haven't found it yet.
Well,
but
Michael has expensive headphones, but
right.
Man, the internet is infinitely fractal.
I know. So, this is how deep I've gone with this in terms of my research. But a lot of the fans of this show emailed the book writer,
Joe Trace.
And he has been really good, actually, because he seems to reply to all of them, and then people will screenshot it and upload it to Tumblr.
Of course.
It's really insightful, because you do find out quite a lot about the process, and obviously people are fascinated because they need to know if their headcanon of Michael and whoever is true. And so what Joe Trace said was that initially, in the first draft of the script, Michael would talk about girls.
Yeah. Well, and that's from the book. In the book, he has a girlfriend.
He's got a girlfriend, doesn't he? Yeah. And then as it went on, they decided just to take that out. And he's like, that can tell you as much as you need to know. Mm-hmm. And I kind of love that.
I love that.
Because it does. And it allows you, you know, he's got an LGBT flag on his jacket.
Right.
These little things.
Yeah.
And they don't talk about it. And there isn't ever a moment of, you know, hey, I'm explicitly gay, let's talk about this for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Or I'm explicitly bi or whatever.
Yeah.
He's just kind of himself. And he's got a really good friend who is of the same gender. Like, it's normalizing to a place that I feel like I haven't really seen.
Yeah. Like, beyond,
in a long time in musical theater.
Whether we're talking LGBT or just like the normalization of not hypermasculinity, you know, we can hang out in our basements and play video games and make "is it really true I'm your favorite person" kind of jokes, and have it be gay or not,
exactly,
and have it not be a big deal.
Absolutely. And that's, do you know what, that is the kind of thing, if I was young and seeing that, I'd be like, oh, that's quite cool, isn't it?
It's so empowering.
And I guess there's a part of me that would like there to be a moment of something in there, but the thing is, it's like, if there was, they'd need to talk about it,
right? No, and that'd be no good.
And the second you talk about it, it's ruined.
I've been trying to find the words around this. I think in contemporary fiction writing, whatever it is, whether it's musical theater or a book or a TV show, there's a particular threshold you pass in, like, universe creation that then pushes you down a hill of self-propagation that results in slash fiction and fan fiction and all these things that, like, you know, Harry Potter did and Lord of the Rings did and Star Trek did, where like, this world is cohesive enough and has enough information but doesn't tell you all of the information, so it's not self-contained, to a point where you can start inventing plausible existences that fit inside this universe, that I think is a thing that fiction writers should strive for, that makes for good, you know, engaging fiction. And I think that Be More Chill, whether the book or the musical, has done. Like, you can imagine this whole world outside of the things that are given to you.
I mean, Tommy, without that, we would never have 50 Shades of Grey. So,
God.
We are blessed.
Or Twilight. You know this story, that Twilight started as a piece of 50 Shades of Grey fan fiction.
Yeah, that's what I mean. No, wasn't it vice versa? No, it's vice versa. 50 Shades of Grey started as a fan fiction of Twilight.
I don't even know anymore. Is that true?
That is what it is, yeah. Because it came after.
Oh,
that's why I said 50 Shades of Grey.
I hate that I made the assumption the other way now in my mind. I need to wash my mouth out with soap. That's creepy. Okay if I do that really fast?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Oh my God, can I tell you a fun fact?
Sure.
So once I swore in front of my parents when I was quite young, and my dad said, do you want to wash your mouth out without soap? And I said, okay. And I went and did it. But right, so as good as the LGBT side of things is, applause.
Yes.
One of the things that I'm kind of surprised by, but I guess you can't change it because it's based on a book, is the character of Christine.
What do you mean?
She's kind of, like, bland as hell.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, honest question, and you can cut this if you want, but have you read the book?
No.
So, I read the book. I read the book like last week. And if you're planning on reading the book, you absolutely should, because it is interesting. I think compare it like the book is better than the movie or whatever are stupid because they're different media. The book certainly has a different bent than the musical. Also, it came out in 2004, which I think...
It has a very different ending as well, doesn't it?
Yes. So the time it came out in puts it in just a very different world. Like, it was definitely a like foreboding parable about the perils of technology, which I think in 2004... would have been met more with like, ha, what do you mean you could have instant access to any kind of data that happened in the world? There's laughs about that in the book, where nowadays the internet exists. Like, this book came out before the internet was really a commonality.
Before it was the thing in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly. No, long before. You know, you have to have a phone call at your home. But, like, there's talks about the fact that... in the book, Jeremy finds out from his squip super early that Rich set a fire and he burnt down the house, but no one else knows because they all have to call each other that morning.
Yeah.
This is what turned into smartphone hour, but like it's all landline sort of stuff. And like where Jeremy's mom, who's in the book, picks up and Jeremy's like, "Mom, hang up. We need to talk about a thing," right? Uh-huh. Which is just not a contemporary problem that people have.
I see.
But, so spoilers, the book is divided into three sections. There's before Squip, after Squip, and then I think it's called Conclusion.
Right.
The big changes in the book, the Squip is not an antagonist. It is a very, like, third-party helper, which makes the moral very different. It's like technology exists and you use it or you abuse it, but that's your choice.
Totally,
There's no, like, the Squip decides to Squip the whole class. There's no Midsummer and Zombies.
It doesn't have its own agenda.
Exactly. The Squip decides that the way to get Christine is for Jeremy to stop their traditional production of Midsummer Night's Dream and have, like, a really heartfelt speech to the audience about how, you know, a bunch of kids got hurt in this fire, but we really need to come together, and I just need to say that I love you, Christine. That's the choice that the Squip has made, and it goes horribly, horribly wrong. And Christine runs off the stage, and the Squip deactivates itself temporarily in Jeremy's brain. And, like, Jeremy is totally distraught, and the Squip comes back and is like, "Man, I must be defective. You know, you gotta wait for Squip 3.0, because I'm Squip 2.0, and I hear they've made some improvements. What do I do?" And, Michael shows up and he's like, "I have some Red Mountain Dew." And the Squip is like, "Yes, yes, you can deactivate me with that. And I should go away because clearly I can't help you." But then the Squip is like, "Wait, what if we just told Christine everything? What if we just told her all that led up to this? This might be our only hope." And they're like, "Well, how could we do this?" And the Squip is like, "Well, if you have a DVD burner, I might be able to access the DVD burner to burn myself a DVD." And Jeremy's like, "No, what about a book? What if we made it a book?" And the Squip is like, "Sure, and I could censor some things, and I could, you know, reduce the amount of time you spend masturbating by 50%. And we could type it all up in a book and then give it to her." And then the third section is like one page, and it says, "So, Christine, that's how it happened. Thank you for reading. Enjoy." And so there's a whole hugely different kind of meta story around the whole thing, and no happy ending where they end up with each other.
Yeah.
But it isn't, they're different stories.
They are very different stories, which is, I find quite interesting, because all I feel like that Joe Iconis has done is just kind of taken the Faustian tale.
Yeah.
And ran with it. Yeah. And applied, and it totally works. It's great. It totally works. But yeah, so the character of Christine. So obviously, the first time we hear about her is in the opening, which is called...
More Than Survive.
More Than Survive. And it's like, "Oh, I'm in love with this girl called Christine. She's great." In a very, you know, weirdly tangential Heather's thing where everyone's like, "Heather, Heather." Yeah. And this time it's Christine, you know, but that's fine. And has this kind of like glowy vibe, and then we hear from Christine, and she sings about how much she loves the theater, and how she uses kind of theater as like a piece of escapism, And then we kind of don't hear from her again until she comes back and she sings about another guy that she fancies.
Right.
And then we don't really hear from her again until the end, where she's like, yeah, I fancy you now.
Right.
Let's get together.
Yeah.
And to me, it's very... That is archaic.
Yeah. They do...
That's archaic.
They do have a brief meeting during the Halloween party that is kind of heartwarming. That's just dialogue.
Yeah, but does it give her...
It gives her a little bit more of a character, but she is pretty...
She is there to be the love interest.
She's pretty one-dimensional, which is unfortunate because in the book, the whole point is that she's not one-dimensional.
Yeah, exactly. She kind of sticks up for herself. So this is the thing. It's like, I just feel... for a show that's so liberal and for a show that's so hashtag woke, do you know what I mean, to say that, I feel like it's missed a big old trick.
Yeah.
Because in the same way, the thing is like... So if you look at kind of all of the females in this...
They're all pretty one-dimensional.
They are, and they all just seem to want to have sex with Jeremy.
Yeah.
There's no one who's like... You don't even get the Janice Ian that you have in Mean Girls.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, I can't be arsed in that shit. I believe in my own stuff.
Yeah.
It's very... It's very male focused.
Yeah, it really is. And like, I get their names confused, which also doesn't speak well.
Yeah, exactly. What, between like Chloe and Madeline's in there somewhere as well.
Yeah.
And
like, I think there's something to be said. They certainly have different personalities, and they do in the book as well, about like, you know, who's more gossipy and who, you know, is more jealous and who is more the popular girl. But It does fall into the female characters written by male authors kind of trap.
It really, really does.
Super sad.
It's just, I feel like it's like, wow, you didn't even have one number of, because I feel like, you know, you could argue that play rehearsal is that number, because that's a lovely thing to talk about, how, you know, I have that, but it's,
as pure character songs, you put play rehearsal up next to Michael in the Bathroom.
Yeah.
As like intense character songs. And Michael in the Bathroom is deep and honest and filled with like real human emotions. And like play rehearsal, like, ha ha ha, I'm a stereotype.
Kind of, do you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, that's nice. She's talking about something she loves. You know, there she's not talking about, oh, I just want to find a lovely boy or something like that, you know.
Right.
And that's really nice, but they don't go anywhere with that. She's kind of like, here I am, I like theater.
Yeah.
And these are all the men that I love. You know, it's a pity. I feel it quite a pity.
It really is. It's a missed beat in this show.
Mm. But that's the thing, it's a missed beat in a show that is so on the money.
Right.
With so many things. Even just have a moment where I guess they kind of have that moment at the end. Let me just find the lyric again.
Yeah, and there is talk about, like, you know,
because she does kind of say, I have issues too. I take it back. Because obviously she's like, oh, I've got the voices in my head, and we've made up our collective mind that we want to go out with you.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
For no particular reason.
I think that's quite grim.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That like all of my doubts and things tell me that I should be with you.
Right.
Jeremy.
Yeah. It's where I wish they stuck a little more to the original book. Like, even just leave it ambiguous and let us set up the happy ending in our mind.
Yeah, exactly.
But they,
because the thing is, in the sort of a Dear Evan Hansen way as well, to make, and I'm not convinced this is so much better. He does do a lot of bad. Yes, he saves everyone.
Right.
That is good. But with the help of Michael.
Yeah.
In a big way. In fact, in many ways, Michael is the one who really saves everyone.
Yeah, basically.
And so does he deserve to get all of his happiness, and Michael's there standing beside him being like, I'm a good sidekick.
Yeah.
You know, tricky. I just think, what I wonder about all of this is, will they make changes?
I don't know.
For Off-Broadway.
It's a huge question I've had, especially since it's, like, published now.
Exactly.
You know, and it has been, I've been trolling back through like some earlier footage and things of this that exists. And there is like Joe Iconis did a TED talk about this show at one point.
Yes.
Where they sing some early drafts of songs that are like not terribly different, but they're like they cut an autistic joke. There's a couple tiny changes like that, and so I know they're ready to make changes, or they're it is certainly a production team that like is willing to make changes. They're not just gonna keep it the way it is because that's how it is.
What I wonder is like I'm not saying I'm a pioneer, but I've not seen anyone talk about this.
No,
I've never seen anyone talk about this. I've seen a lot of people obsess over the guys.
Yeah.
I've not seen like, oh, here's some lovely Christine fan art.
No,
like,
it doesn't have good female representation in the way that something like Heather's does.
Exactly. And Mean Girls, to give it its plaudits.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? I've still not heard all from Mean Girls yet, but as the songs are rolling out, I'm like, oh, that's a nice message.
It's like you've got power, you've got choice.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just a sex object.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I don't know, it's tricky because in our, you know, we're both very out and out feminists here. And it's a tricky one because you could argue, okay, well, Be More Chill is just a story of, it's a story of guys and friendship between guys and, you know, guys saying that they should love each other a bit more.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think actually another thing that I love about Be More Chill is the plot line with his dad.
Yes.
And I think his dad's actually a really, for such a small role, a really interesting and very complex character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who, you know, has gone through this divorce.
Yeah.
Is aware that he's kind of failing as a father, but doesn't really know how to fix it.
Yeah.
And so then gives advice to his best friend.
Yeah.
To kind of like make up from where I left off.
Right. But then does bring it back around. But then.
Yeah.
You have Jeremy, who basically is like filled with unrequited love for a girl he's just never met, you know.
Yeah.
I wrote a letter to Christine about how I felt, and then I tore it up and flush it. And they basically seem to meet for the first time in play rehearsal.
Yeah.
And I do have a struggle with this, like, I deserve this love because I have it kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Male
it's like
narrative.
I saved you.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, well, yeah, I guess, but Michael brought the juice.
Right. Like, it's like, but I'm in love with you. And it's like, well, yeah, but what about me? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, so I don't know. I can't see it changing. It's a big change.
Yeah, it'd be hard. I don't think you could do it with one or two lines here and there, and that's about all they might have room for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess what I want to know is like, if we do have listeners who are listening, who are like big stands of the show, do you know what I mean? And may have been there in the Tumblr Rialto.
Yeah.
Did you clock this? Like, because I feel like, I generally feel like no one's mentioned this.
Yeah, that there's not great lady representation in this.
No, and it's like, it's one of those things that nowadays, with, you know, the rise of feminism, is something that we're talking about a lot more, and when we don't see it,
well, and it's something
we point it out.
Something that's missing in musical theater, and especially in these kinds of shows that are supposed to be hyper-progressive and the face of new musical theater, like, where the heck are the feminists?
Yeah. So it's just interesting.
It really is.
It's just interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's a little surprise. It's that, you know, that way, like, you get to know a child really, really well, and then they do something. You're like, "That's kind of a characteristic."
Yeah,
and
like when they say the bumble ball scares the fuck out of my younger brother.
Yeah, exactly. Or they lash out, or something. You know, and they just slide ever so slightly down in your estimation. You're like, "Oh,
yeah." And it
okay.
It does speak to that, like, musical theater proper is still very much a boys' club, and that things like. Fun home are few and far between.
Yeah.
Which is a
shame. But then again, actually, what I will say, and this will sound really silly, but this season is kind of in the season of the gal in some ways.
Yeah.
In some ways, because with something like Once on This Island.
Yes.
You
super
know,
super hyper feminist piece.
Super hyper feminist. Something obviously like Mean Girls.
Yep.
something like Frozen.
Like Frozen.
You know?
And like
The Love Between Two Sisters.
Even SpongeBob, it's... Tina Lando directing, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some really nice strides happening here.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just find it... just interesting. So I would this is the kind of, you know, this will be like my Reddit discussion point. I would love to talk to people what they think about this. And I'm not saying hate this musical,
right?
Go
right.
Tear down Tumblr. That's never going to happen. But that kind of idea of like this musical was so close to ticking all of the boxes,
right? And it's just missing a few.
It's just missing it. That doesn't happen,
right? Like this musical doesn't pass the Bechdel test, which. I know it is like terribly unequipped to kind of measure some of these things, but it could.
I think it easily
could. Totally
could. Like the thing is, I didn't just another character.
Right.
Give me, well, I don't know, just something, a little something.
Yeah.
The girls don't all need to be obsessed with the guys.
Right. Or, you know, let's throw it out the window. Maybe Christine says no at the end and it's more of a Dear Evan Hansen ending where it's like, yeah, you suck. And that's how we're going to leave our life. You know,
yeah, exactly.
And like we can still sing a happy song at the end, but like we're not getting, everyone's not going to dance around us because of how happy they are that we're in love.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, yeah. So
a point to make.
I'm going to get death threats.
Probably not.
I hope not. Please don't give me death threats. I don't want to get into that.
They're going to give you life threats. You're going to be alive tomorrow or else.
And you upgraded. Ba-da-ba-ba. Oh, 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 Jeremy. It's true that I found you. But look around you. Whoa. All your peers are just so incomplete. You can't see it, but they're all in pain. Operating systems obsolete. Let's complete the chains and get inside the brains. Let's save the pitiful children. Whoa. Let's save the pitiful children. Whoa. Let's teach the pitiful children who just haven't a clue just what to do. Help them to help you.
Before we conclude,
yes,
I kind of want to look. We've charted this quite well, actually. I feel good on us in structure. We talked about the content, talked about the themes, how it's risen to power, and kind of I now want to look to the future.
Yes,
and what, you know, is Be More Chill? Is it what's that word? Like a sign, a beacon,
mm-hmm.
Of the shape of things to come.
I sure hope so.
So I do, and I don't.
Okay.
In some ways. So in terms of the content, absolutely.
Yes.
Great job.
Yes.
In terms of how it happened, worries me a little bit.
Okay.
So the only professional production that's ever happened of this...
Mm-hmm.
Was in New Jersey.
Right.
In the
Two
Rivers Theater. There have been other productions. There's great ones in Australia, according to Wikipedia. There have been one in the States, I think, again, in New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
With a company called Exit 82.
Yeah.
Which was an amateur production,
mm-hmm.
of Be More Chill,
mm-hmm.
that I feel must have broken the record for like popularity of amateur productions,
yes,
in the world ever.
100%.
People traveled across continents,
mm-hmm.
to see this show.
Yeah.
And this is an amateur production.
Yeah.
That's never happened before.
Yeah.
You know, they were saying that at the theater when they were doing kind of like a post show,
mm-hmm.
they had to get security
yeah.
to monitor the crowds.
Yeah, like it was entirely unexpected exactly how popular it was going to be.
Absolutely. And, you know, the actors in this show have, like, fan art
right.
and fan accounts
yeah.
and, you know, stands and things. And I'm like, that is odd
yeah.
to me. I don't think it's necessarily good because I just don't think it's the right forum
okay.
for it. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't see amateur shows.
Right.
You absolutely should.
Right.
But the way you behave around it
yeah.
and the understanding that you have around it, I think needs to be tweaked. And it was beautifully put in a Tumblr post that I read today where someone was like, I really hope the Exit 82 production doesn't kind of set the precedent for the shape of things to come.
Yeah.
I'm going to find it because I want to credit whoever it is just in case they listen. Perfect. It's like number two. Okay, so I'm just going to read it verbatim. This is from, I think this was the original user. Dear Davy Jacobs, of course, a dear Van Hansen Van Eyck. Please don't let the audience of the NYC production of Be More Chill be like Exit 82. I know it's just been announced, but please, if you see Be More Chill in New York, don't act like a dick. Exit 82 did a wonderful job, but the audience was terrible.
Yeah.
A musical is not a sing-along or a concert. You're there to see the actress perform the show, so don't sing along or hum, especially during Michael in the Bathroom. Also, don't say lines along with the actors. They are the ones on stage, not you. You don't need to scream when you see your favourite actor or character. Yes, you can laugh during the funny parts and cheer a bit, but don't be so loud that you can't hear the actors say their names.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be on your phone or talking during the performance. And if you are going to record a bootleg, do it discreetly. Disclaimer, I disagree with that. Don't do that. The bottom line is, be respectful. This is the actor's job and they have to focus. They're giving you this performance and you need to give them your respect. You don't want to be the rude person that Will Rowan tweets about during intermission.
Yeah,
I might sound aggressive, but this is just some basic theater etiquette. I love Be More Chill, and the stories of the audience from Exit 82 just made me so sad because people were rude when they had a chance to see Be More Chill live. And I'm just like, mic drop. Like, yeah. I couldn't put it better myself.
I think this is why hipsters can't describe why they want to be hipsters, but this is why the like culture of hipsterism exists.
Mm-hmm.
Because when something becomes popular, sometimes its popularity ruins it.
Yeah. So, for example, like when I went to see Hamilton, mm-hmm. I can't remember if I said this in the book or not. When I went to see Hamilton, this is Hamilton in the UK. They said immigrants would get the job done. And they had a 20-second ovation.
Yeah.
And it's like, sure.
Right.
But you're only doing that because it happened on the Tonys.
Right. And like, because you know it's coming and because, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, we're getting into Rocky Horror territory here.
Right.
And it's very unnecessary because there is, and I don't want to be the big old grumpy adult here telling you how you should live your life.
Yeah.
But there is an element of competition when it comes to fandoms.
Yeah.
I'm
a bigger fan than you.
Exactly. I know this better. There is a beautiful community in the musical theatre fandom. I ain't gonna like put that down. I think it's incredible and I think it's very respectful
yes.
amongst peers.
Yes.
But there is an element of competition and it's always been there. I've yeah. been guilty of it.
Yeah.
I know this music. Do you know this musical?
Right. Well,
I thought you would know about that one. Oh, right. That's so interesting.
And you want to show that off and you want to demonstrate it. And what better place than at the show you adore so much that you know all the lines?
Exactly. And that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about going and enjoying this moment that if you do genuinely love it, why wouldn't you watch it?
Right.
Why wouldn't you take the time to have that moment? Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing as like asking people to put their phones down at concerts.
Yeah.
It is an antithesis to like our core lizard brain kind of motivations. That like, I think takes conscious effort to combat.
Yep. So it doesn't happen with all the shows, but it's been happening a lot. And it's been happening with the biggins, big Tumblr shows.
Well, I mean, I think it's been happening with the shows. It's the direction Broadway is going, regardless whether you're SpongeBob or Be More Chill, right?
Yeah, but also I think no one's going to be at the band's visit being like, yes!
Right, but I think the band's visit is the holdout. You know, people, when I saw Frozen in Denver, people showed up in costume.
Yeah. I don't mind that.
Right.
I don't mind being a big fan of something.
But
I'm a big old nerd.
It's like, only a half step until you're also standing up and putting your hair down in the middle of the audience. Right?
Yeah. That is the thing. And there is a line. There really, really is a line. And I feel like, and as well, because a show like Be More Chill is attracted a lot of new people to the theater. Yes. Incredible.
Right.
Absolutely incredible. But when you're in our house, you need to live by our rules.
Yeah. Well, and I think
it's that kind of thing.
You have to understand that the rules are there for your enjoyment of the piece.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And everyone else's enjoyment of the piece.
Right.
Please just be respectful. That is what theatre should be.
Yeah.
And it's the reason why Patti LuPone stops a show.
Yeah.
And it's the reason why X picks up a phone and throws it in Great Comet.
Tweets about these the people, bootleggers in the audience. Like,
yeah. These people are doing their jobs here and have been doing their jobs and have worked so hard to do it, and they want you to have a really, really good time,
right?
But they're not here to hear you
ruin
it for everyone else.
I agree with you. I think I am resistant to audience blaming because it feels like victim blaming. That, like, you set up your audience for your show, whether you specifically do or the industry does, you know?
Yeah.
I really struggle with, like, I've met theater teachers who are like, oh, kids these days can't get off their phones, and so they can't get off their phones during their performance because they're always snapping and tweeting and instant Facebooking, whatever. And, like, in my mind, I'm like, if your show was interesting, they'd put it away.
Yeah.
Because they're not, like, taking photos of the show. They are bored. And what's in their pocket is more interesting. And, like, not that you have to make your show a mile of minute interesting, but you do have to teach your audience that to, like, give the chance that the show might be more interesting than the Snapchat in their pocket. And so I want the way to teach the audiences that about Be More Chill, about these kind of fancy kind of shows. That, like, hey, it's wonderful that you love this show. The best way to showcase that is by doing these things. And here's why. You know, if you're not singing along during the show, it will let the other audience members who love the show as much as you experience the show in its truest form.
Yep.
But, like, there's got to be a way to do that. That's not like a 20-minute announcement at the beginning of the show.
I know. I just don't know. Because the thing is that will happen. But then, you know, Annabelle will start saying the line.
Right.
But then Jonathan is like, oh, well, Annabelle's like, I'm going to join in because I know better than her.
Yeah.
And then you've caught fire again.
Right.
It's just really tricky. I don't like the idea that that's the kind of way we're going.
Yeah.
That this is a thing that we should be doing in theaters. It's really not.
Well,
I hate it.
And it feels dangerous because there's a narrative where we're part of the problem, you know? We're emboldening the fan base and bigging the fan base, and
absolutely,
you know, the people but listening to this podcast are the people who are going to go to the show and sing along.
Definitely. But I would never commend, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's like, if I caught my own children doing that, I would be disgraced. and I would because it's not something I advocate. And that's why I'm very open about bootlegs.
Yeah.
And very, actually, side point, there's no bootleg of the original production of the show.
I think they're doing a very good job. I think Broadway and the Broadway types have gotten very savvy about bootlegs and their...
Do you think?
...potential and how to manage them and, like, how much of a bootleg to let out and what portions of a bootleg to let out and whether you let a bootleg of your whole show out or just a little bit. I see that change happening. I think they've finally grown wise to what is useful and what is not, or at least are trying some things.
Yeah, I guess. But it's just for a show this popular, like Heathers is out.
Right.
We have Heathers.
Right.
We've got Great Comet.
But I think the only reasons those exist are because whoever, the producers or the rights holders, have decided letting those exist is better for the marketability for these shows than not letting them exist. Whereas for Be More Chill, a show that currently has an off-Broadway production in the works, minimizing the access to bootlegs creates...
But it's never existed. Because this is the whole thing, is Be More Chill technically only existed 4 months ago when it exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Before that, it wasn't like it was just rolling around the place, because if it was, it would be everywhere.
Right.
I just find that interesting.
I think they've just quashed it. I think
the fan base is much more powerful than that.
Interesting.
100%.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just a brief side note.
Yeah.
I just think I really loved reading this post because it gave me a lot of hope, I guess.
Right.
And the thing is, this wasn't in a Broadway house. This was in an amateur theater,
right?
Amateur production in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And people were still doing this. And it's like, if that was one of my productions that I put on, just an amateur production, I'd be livid. I'd be really, really angry, because I'd be like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Why would you think that was okay?
Exactly. And they, you know, the ushers in these theaters aren't going to know how to handle that.
No, if they have ushers, like...
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's not fair. I mean, to be honest, I can't see that kind of thing, you know, cross-continental visits. I can't see that happening regularly.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't, because, again, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's so off-putting.
It is. It is indeed. And I just think that line at the end of, like, it just made me sad because people were rude when they had the chance to see Be More Chill live. That's the thing, is it's like, whenever you go see, whether it's off-Broadway, on-Broadway, amateur.
Right.
This is an opportunity that you've been given.
Yeah.
So use it well. Don't ruin it for yourself. Well,
and
it's
like telling audiences that, like, we know you like being here. You've expressed that by showing up. You don't need to express that elsewhere, except in, you know, your laughs and your claps during the appropriate moments that we've socially decided upon are appropriate for these things that support the art.
That's it. That support the art. That are woven into the performance as a whole.
Right.
You know, you do nothing for Will Roland's performance when you scream out, "I love you, Will Roland."
Yeah. Yeah. No.
You do nothing. All you do is you just take everyone else out of it.
Ruin all of it. Yeah. It's almost like we need to start adapting the applause signs they do for live television.
Yeah.
Be like, now's okay to clap.
You may clap now.
Now's the time.
Oh my God, that would be so great. Because have you ever had that moment, if you're in a show or if you're directing a show, whatever, and either you've got like an applause segue, or you've got a no applause segue where you really don't want applause to happen.
Right.
And then it happens and you're like, oh no, you ruined it. Yeah. You ruined it.
What always gets it for me, because high schoolers and especially middle schoolers love to hear themselves. When like a band is playing and one kid is like, yeah, we're going to clap along to the beat of this song. But they're clapping on the one and two or something.
Yeah.
And it's not right. And then everyone else joins in, but like they're slightly at different tempos. And then they're at like two different tempos and they're different from where the performers are. And then the performers want to do a tempo change, but they don't know what to do because everyone's clapping.
And then they continue to clap for three more bars just in case.
It's like,
oh, no, I'll stop clapping.
Oh, it stops. And then one kid's like, no, we could start clapping again.
And then everyone laughs at that kid.
Right.
And nobody's watching the show.
It's like, this damn performance is not about you. And it's selfish to do these things.
It is. It just is. So big old grumpy Gus is over
here. Right, look at us. Don't mess with our theater.
Yeah, that's generally the way I feel. Love this show. Love it to bits.
Yes.
But remember that it is a show.
Yeah.
When the movie comes out, go for it. Don't give a shit.
And there are voices in my head. So many voices in my head. And they can yell and hurt like hell, but I know I'll be fine. Still have
was Be More Chill.
What a ride.
What a ride. I'm so excited to see where the show goes from here.
I know. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, I can't call it.
No, it feels like it's paving new ground in what used to be a traditional musical theater, like, I don't know, pipeline?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. It's the wild card, I feel. It's almost like
the wild card. It is the wild card. Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. And hopefully it will be a wild card starring Keanu Reeves.
One can only hope.
He's like the only cast member they've not talked about yet. They must be trying to get him.
It's probably going to be him.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
I'm not even kidding. It would change my life.
Oh, that would be just wonderful.
It really would. Hey, I bet you Keanu Reeves didn't star in our next show.
I mean, who knows, but I do have a quiz question about it.
Cool. That's an awful segue, I'm sorry.
It was a great segue. Jimmy, what show stars, quote unquote, actors named Effie, Dina, and Laurel, but has nothing to do with Dreamgirls? Dun, dun, dun.
Laurel.
I can tell you what
Jimmy.
Show it isn't.
What isn't it?
It's not Dreamgirls.
It's not.
It's also not Be More Chill, so we've narrowed it down.
Yep. Could be anything. If you want to get in touch with us and tell us what you think it is, you absolutely can, and please do. Come find me over on Twitter. I am at @AsInHendrix or YouTube at the same handle.
Can you imagine if we did the same show twice in a row? I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube, or you can check out our show Twitter, Jim and Tomic, or our website, jimandtomic.com, which is a link to the Reddit discussion and a bunch of other things, including our Patreon, where you can support us because you're great.
Exactly. Again, some great Reddit discussions. I'm loving Reddit again. And do you know what's been nice?
What?
People talking to each other.
Good for them.
That's what we want. We want to create a community.
We're trying desperately.
Always.
Always.
And if you want to be a part of this community, then tell your friends all about us.
Yeah.
And we will see you next week.
Until then.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Did they? We had a toy called a bumble ball. Oh, I must have been five because my middle brother was born.
Oh my God! Is that the one that has like colored things sticking out of it?
It looks. Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Oh my goodness!
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not gonna want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation: The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.